As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a hand break off.
Hello and welcome to Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. I'm Ian Stone. Today I'm joined by James McNicholas and the former Arsenal player, Adrian Clarke. Good morning, chaps.
Good morning.
Morning, Ian.
International break. Isn't it tedious, by the way, chaps?
Feels like a long one, this one.
It does.
Particularly bad. I think the absence of midweek football means that Arsenal games kind of feel few and far between enough as it is. So throw another international break in there and you do start to miss it.
Good goal by Bukayo Saka though, wasn't it?
Great goal, yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely to watch him play. I mean, I do worry, Adrian, about his how tired he gets, and maybe we can talk about that a little bit. But we're going to have a sort of general state of play about the Arsenal this week. Time to take stock, really, after the, I don't know, one could say turbulent roller coaster of the first 7 weeks of the season. We were pleased to see Jack Wilshere back in Arsenal training gear in his bid to keep fit and hopefully find a team. It is ridiculous. I saw him as a pundit the other week and he's 29. He's too young to be doing that. We thought we'd have a quick Jack Wilshere catch up. Adrian, I'll start with you. Favourite moment or abiding memory of Jack Wilshere?
Yeah, look, I really liked him as a player. As a youngster, I think he's up there in terms of the best academy players that we've produced. I think Cesc Fabregas, although it wasn't through the academy, was the best young player that I saw. But Jack wasn't too far behind in terms of his skill, quick feet, intelligence. He was just an impish, sort of cheeky player, wasn't he? That was perfect, I think, for Arsene Wenger. The moment that stands out is a really obvious one. It's because I commentated on the goal against Norwich City. It was just a thing of beauty.
Wilshere, Cazorla, Giroud gets it back through. Wilshere onside and scores. Norwich completely static and caught out by the through ball from Giroud and the eventual finish from Wilshere.
Wow, what football this is from Arsenal.
In terms of the way that he started the move, he skipped past a couple of players, laid it wide and then joined in again. Little flick and a 1-2 with Cazorla, and then he gets in from the Giroud flick and scores. It was just an unbelievable goal. I think maybe one of the most underrated goals in the wider spectrum of the football world. It never seems to get talked about other than by Arsenal fans. I just thought it was kind of like award-winning poetry, and it perfectly encapsulated Jack's talent and his football brain. So that's a standout. There are others. In terms of off the pitch, I'll never forget the FA Cup parade. I'll never forget it because I worked on it. I worked on that parade in 2015, and he was battered. He was absolutely battered.
He was, wasn't he? Yes.
And he should never have been allowed near a microphone, but I loved it. I think secretly everybody loved it, even though he got into a little bit of trouble afterwards for slating Spurs. But yeah, I love the fact that he was just a normal regulation fellow. There was no airs or graces. if good things happened, he wanted to go out and get smashed. And he hated Tottenham, which I think in this parish is always quite welcome.
Yeah, well, I was going to have that one, certainly, as you know, because you felt like a fan. What you want from the players, James, I mean, you tell me if you think this is true. What you want from the players is to feel the same as us when we played Spurs a few weeks ago, and it felt like a communion between the players and the fans. It felt like they were as excited about it as we were, and Jack Wilshere sort of embodied that, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He may not have been relatable in terms of his extraordinary talent, which I don't think many of us could empathise with, but as a guy and as an Arsenal man, he'd grown up as a West Ham fan as a kid, but he'd been within the Arsenal Academy so long that the club really was close to his heart. And you could see that in the way he interacted with fans, the way he carried himself, the way he celebrated those big occasions. But he did have this huge talent to go alongside it, and it was absolutely thrilling to watch him break into the first team. I remember, you know, talk about this 16-year-old player. I remember he scored a hat-trick, I think, on one occasion for the under-18s. And it was like, there's this midfielder who's put away a couple of hat-tricks this season. Everyone was thinking, you know, what have we got on our hands here? Is this the next Wayne Rooney or something like that? And those first forays into the League Cup, I remember him playing off the right-hand side in a kind of a midfield four, you know, almost looking like a kind of young Lionel Messi playing from the right, you know, the way he would cut inside, dribble infield. He was just so exciting. And I suppose, speaking of Messi, the game that sticks in my mind is that Barcelona game. I think it was 2008, 2009, something like that, where he really shone against Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets, some of the best midfielders in the world. And, you know, there's been all that talk, I think, that summer of Barcelona DNA. They've been trying to lure Cesc Fabregas back to the Nou Camp and talking about how he had Barcelona DNA. And I just remember that night feeling like Jack Wilshere had really shown what Arsenal DNA was about. And yeah, he was sensational that evening in what was, you know, one of the Emirates Stadium's happier, more memorable occasions.
Yeah, that was a very, very good night. I do remember going to the pub afterwards and seeing everyone else, and everyone had a sort of wide-eyed, childlike look on their faces, actually. Like we'd seen something very, very special that night, and Jack obviously was a huge part of that. I mean, aside from those, one for me was when he played for England for a couple of games, when he played deep, quite deep midfield, really, and he was pinging 60-yard passes. Like, he had like a magic wand, really, the way he was playing these passes. And I thought he could play in this position for England for the next 10 years. And then obviously injuries and all the rest of it. But we're glad he's back involved in the Arsenal setup in some way, because as Adrian, you were saying, he is an Arsenal boy.
And it's nice, I think. It's nice that the club have offered him that opportunity. It maybe took a while because I'm not sure what he's been up to in this sort of interlull between clubs. But yeah, I think it's a good gesture. And there's somebody out there that will benefit from Jack Wilshere if he can stay fit and healthy, because you don't lose that ability to pass the ball, to you know, to see things that other players can't see, to glide past opponents. He's still got something to offer if, and this is the big if, I guess, if he's still got that hunger to really put in the hard yards and get himself up to speed.
Well, let's hope so. By the way, a reminder that you can get yourself a third off an Athletic subscription because you listen to this podcast. Head to theathletic.com/ArsenalPod to find it. And you can hear this pod without the ads there too. Speaking of The Athletic, James, you've written a piece about Ainsley Maitland-Niles, asking what's next. You know, on the script it says for the youngster, but he's 24 years old. He has to sort himself out fairly quickly, doesn't he? Because that can turn into late 20s and then you're 30. I mean, we all know this. It was a long time ago for me. But what is next, James, for Ainsley Maitland-Niles?
Well, it's an interesting situation, isn't it? Because I think most people assumed he might leave the club this summer. And there was that kind of back and forth on transfer deadline day where there was a loan offer from Everton. The player wanted to go there.
He wanted to go, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly, was happy to go there, even though he was likely to be used as a right back. They're looking for a kind of long-term successor to Seamus Coleman, and that's the role they envisaged him taking up. I know there's been a lot of talk in the media about what his best position is or where he'd like to play, but he would have been very happy, apparently, to go to Everton and play there now. But Arsenal didn't want him to go. And I think when you look at the situation, I think the central midfield area is probably the reason that they resisted it, because if you think back to the start of the season, Thomas Partey was injured. They know, looking ahead to January and the African Cup of Nations, they're going to lose Thomas Partey again there. They're going to lose Mohamed Elneny in all likelihood. So that will leave a bit of a gap in central midfield. They may feel they can use him there. It's just a kind of tricky position for a player, I think, because like you say, he's 24. He doesn't really have a settled position. He's been involved in plenty of league games this season. He's been involved in 5 of the 7 games, but he's played little over 100 minutes, really. I mean, he's come on a couple of occasions when we're already into stoppage time. It's fleeting appearances right at the end of games. And I suppose he just has the situation to kind of weigh up of, is he content with that? He's got about a couple of years left on his contract. No talk of an imminent extension. Arsenal probably need to make a decision on his future sooner rather than later. I just can't help but feel that the situation he's in currently, where he's part of Arteta's plans and featuring kind of semi-regularly, feels like a bit of a temporary arrangement.
Yeah.
And I think sooner or later, if he wants to fulfil his potential, he's going to need to go somewhere where he accumulates more minutes. But yeah, it's an interesting one because, you know, we talk about people being Arsenal players and coming through the academy, and he's absolutely one of those. So you like to see him involved, but I just fear for him a little in terms of him being purely a utility player. Mikel Arteta has asked him to embrace that and said, you know, that's a rare skill, a rare asset. And I think that's all well and good, but are players content with that? Would they not rather be starting regularly, even if it is a little further down the league? Although I should say Everton are above us in the league right now.
Yes, quite. Adrian, I mean, you were a midfielder, but if you could have swapped however many games you played for Arsenal for, say, 3 times as many games in a different, say, at right back or left back or whatever, would you have done that? And is it... is it a weird psychological thing for a player to come through the youth ranks playing in one position, particularly something creative, if you like midfield, and then suddenly you're moved to right back and you might feel like, no, I don't want to do that?
In short, yes, I would have swapped it.
Yeah.
I had 9 games. I would gladly have taken 27 at fullback, but that would never have happened because anyone that ever saw me play would have known that how terrible I was at defending. So,
but you understand the question, right?
I absolutely. Mean,
it's really just about game time, surely.
Yeah, look, he got into the England squad as a left wing back, a position that on paper is completely alien to him. He wants to play central midfield. He can do a job at right back. He's right footed. So to play at left wing back and get into the England squad on the back of it was actually quite remarkable. And my sort of best memories of Maitland-Niles as an Arsenal first team player are probably in that position when he came through, you know, flying down that wing, also defending excellently. So yeah, it's a strange one. I feel as if... let's get this straight. I think in a way, Arsenal are using him this season as somebody that can fill in a number of different positions. And that's their prerogative. He is a utility player in their eyes. And he is a backup in central midfield. He's a backup at right back, possibly a backup at left back as well. So I absolutely get why Arsenal didn't want to let him go. But from Ainsley's point of view, how do you feel about that? Well, I don't think he'll be feeling brilliantly. What he's got to do is reconcile the situation in his own mind and accept it for what it is. And in a sense, play for his own future. When he gets those chances to impress, he has to shine, not just for Arsenal, but for himself. Even because in his heart, he may already believe that I'm not going to be a first team regular under Mikel Arteta. He might believe that, but he's got to... there's no point sulking, because if he sulks, plays badly, he won't get the move that he needs. So he's got to get his head around quite a difficult situation. things can change. You know, things can always change in football. You know, changes happen in terms of managers, changes happen in terms of circumstances. So all is not lost. But in my opinion, and this is only my opinion, just not sure long term whether he is going to be good enough to nail down a position in the Arsenal first team. Certainly not as a central midfielder, which we all know is his desire. I just haven't seen enough from him in that position to say that he's going to make it there.
James, you hint at this in the piece, that maybe he's finally come to terms with what his best position is. Do you think he's missed the boat a little bit? I mean, I felt a few years ago he could have become Arsenal's right back for the next 10, 12 years.
I think his greatest potential for me was in those fullback, wingback roles. And, you know, in recently as January, he went out to West Brom because he wanted to play in midfield, and Sam Allardyce told him he'd give him an opportunity there. And he did indeed play the second half of the season in central midfield for West Brom. But I think since then...
And they went down, by the way. I mean, I'm not blaming him particularly, but they went down in that.
No, I think Ainsley as an individual did okay in that role in that period. But I think since then he's realised, you know, as Adrian said, how did he get into the England squad playing as a left wing back? It is in these defensive areas where he has tended to shine. And I think the way it was put to me, going to West Brom almost got that out of his system. You know, he feels like he's really able to kind of knuckle down and focus and play in the position that maximises his potential. Has he missed the boat at Arsenal? I think so. I mean, at the time Mikel Arteta arrived at the club, you know, it was December, and around that period, Ainsley, I think, was on record talking about how fullback wasn't his best position or his preferred position. The next month, Arsenal went out and signed a right back in Cedric Suarez. It was one of Arteta's first priorities as soon as he came into the club. Since then, we've seen Callum Chambers come back from loan and play in that position. We've seen the signing of Tomiyasu, who started really, really well. So I do think that probably that ship has now sailed for him. But if I was him, if I was his agent and I was looking at his next move, I think I would be looking at a club who played him in that position, because I do think that's where his strengths really lie. It is just a shame because, like you, I think he probably, in different circumstances, could have made a real fist of playing there for Arsenal. I think he certainly had some of the key attributes you'd look for in that position. But fortunately, Tomiyasu's come in. He's a very different type of fullback, but he started very well. And maybe he's a more natural fit too for Arteta's system.
Yeah.
Can I just say,
Stoney, yeah, psychologically, the difference between being a regular and really... Obviously, very few players are ever guaranteed a place. So in football, uncertainty is something you have to live with. But you know when you're liked by the manager, you know when you're trusted, you know when you're a mainstay within the team. And that feeling, and to take it back to my own career, that feeling of knowing that you're a key man, knowing that the manager really likes you, knowing that the fans, you know, rely on you, that feeling is special. And I've also experienced the feeling of being in a squad but not really being part of the first team, used sparingly in and out, where you're not really part of it, and you're always chasing, and there's that dream that you have, but the feeling that you get inside as a footballer is quite empty when you compare it with what I was just talking about, where you are an integral figure. So I think at some stage in every player's career you need to find that, you need to find a place where you are loved and where you kind of belong. Even if it only lasts for a season or two, you need it. Because I don't think you experience being a professional footballer properly until you're in that position.
Yeah, that was, it got slightly sadder there at the end. But you're right. You know, you're right. You need love. And maybe he's not had quite enough at the Arsenal. We'll see how that develops. Like you say, James, 2 years. Slightly under 2 years left in his contract. They have to make a decision. There are other players who are also in a sort of limbo state. Tim Stillman wrote a very, very good piece, which I'd urge people to read, going through some of those players, Alexandre Lacazette, Eddie Nketiah, Gabriel Martinelli, Callum Chambers. There's quite a few. James, looking to January and then on to the next transfer window in the summer, is it more now about moving players out than getting many in?
I think it might well be. When you look at the money that Arsenal have spent in the summer as well, I suspect they may try and keep their powder dry for the following summer in January. But there are players who could well have left the club in the summer and didn't. You know, you mentioned Eddie Nketiah as one there. You know, that situation is going to creep towards a resolve maybe as soon as January. If not, it'll be, you know, the following summer. And there are a couple more in that boat. I think it's tricky, though. Someone like Lacazette, for example, you know, he's into the final year of his contract, but I think the likelihood is he might stay to the end because players don't tend to move 6 months out from their contract. There's kind of too much appeal in waiting for the Bosman. And from an Arsenal perspective as well, they may decide it's worth having him around as cover. You know, we saw him come on against Brighton and have a decent
impact.
Made a
difference.
Yeah,
made a difference, didn't he?
And I think there will be opportunities for him. There will be games that suit him. So I wonder if he'll stay until the summer too. It'll just be interesting to see what sort of market it is in January, you know, if the fact that crowds are back in stadiums, will that give a bit increased confidence in terms of spending, increased revenues? I'm not sure. But when you look back at Arsenal's summer business, you know, I think the incomings, you have to say they got a lot of business done. They did very well. And some of those recruitment decisions already look quite astute. In terms of the outgoings, there were probably one or two more they could have done that they didn't get done. And I think they'll try to address that in January. The difficulty will be the same as it was in the summer, really, finding takers and also finding players who are willing to move when they may prefer to kind of run their contracts down and have a few more options.
Adrian, anything to add to that, really? I mean, it's pretty much what James said, right? We're looking to try and get rid of a few players. But again, like the summer, who's going to buy them?
Yeah, I don't see massive amounts of activity in January, if I'm honest. I totally agree on Lacazette. I think he's incredibly unlucky, actually, not to be playing from the start. Obviously, Arteta's nailed his colours to the mast in terms of Aubameyang's the first-choice striker, which is fair enough, absolutely. But there are certain games, and I think the Brighton one was a great case in point, where a Lacazette style of striker is going to benefit the team a little bit more. So it'll be interesting to see if Mikel Arteta is able to recognise that and make some tough decisions, either by putting Aubameyang on the bench occasionally or moving him to the left to bring in that focal point, because Lacazette is excellent at it. And yeah, Arsenal couldn't get out their own half against Brighton. They needed the ball through to Aubameyang just wasn't on in that particular game. They needed a Lacazette style striker. So he will have value, no doubt about that, between now and the end of the season. Yeah, as for the others, look, I think Martinelli's just someone that's in a weird place at the moment. He's just, I guess, just got to be patient and wait for chances
to
shine.
Sorry to interrupt, but is he one of those guys that needs a bit of love? Do you think he's one of those? I mean, I know everyone does, of course, Is he one of those guys that needs to be first team and needs to be playing on a regular basis and have that feeling, perhaps?
I don't know him personally. I think most footballers want that and crave it. But when you play for Arsenal, it's really hard. You've got to be seriously good to get in that first team on a regular basis. And you look at the competition. They've all grabbed their chances, haven't they? So maybe a loan move for Martinelli, but I still feel that he has plenty to offer. I still believe in him as an Arsenal player, but he must be really getting frustrated. That it's a different situation for him. He will be part of the squad, I believe, in 2-3 years' time, maybe part of the first team. He should be. But Nketiah, Chambers, Kolasinac, guys like that, Maitland-Niles, I'm not sure about that. I think they might end up moving on probably in the summer.
No, I mean, this sort of takes us really quite neatly into how things have gone so far. I mean, obviously, on this podcast, we've talked extensively about each game and about how it's gone. James, the Brighton game was a good corrective, wasn't it, really? I mean, we all, Tottenham at home was just a joyous in every way and really one of the happiest days of my life, I'll be honest with you. Genuinely, a real, as I said before, a communion between fans and players, and it really felt like Emirates was rocking unlike almost any other time I've been there. But Brighton showed us, yeah, we got a decent first team. We're pretty solid in defence, but we don't offer a huge amount going forward as yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we had those three defeats in the league followed by three wins, and you find yourself asking, are we as bad as we looked against Manchester City or as good as we looked against Tottenham? And I think the Brighton game, as you say, is a bit of a corrective. It kind of demonstrates that we're somewhere between those two extremes. It's interesting. I think, you know, Arteta has completely remodeled his defence. You know, you look at the new goalkeeper, new right back, new centre half in Ben White alongside Gabriel. But if you look back to last season and our defensive record was actually pretty decent. And it was really, I think, in the opposition's half that we had more trouble, particularly in the first half of last season. And funnily enough, we're sort of in a not too dissimilar state now, where I think we all agree it looks like there's a really solid platform to build on. I think the problem against Brighton, as Adrian said, was that we just couldn't get out of our own half. And that was down to two things, really. I think when we played out from the back, we didn't have the same confidence, conviction. Brighton pressed us extremely intelligently. And I think for the first time, we really saw that defensive unit struggle with that. And then when we went longer to Aubameyang, you know, he didn't hold it up as well as he had against Tottenham. And I think that's partly because he was up against 3 6-foot-plus centre-halves who were very, very dominant. And it just meant that we never really got going. But what I would say is if you look at the fixtures coming up, I think, you know, they'll tip the balance, really, because, you know, we're sort of on a fairly even keel, having corrected a terrible start with some very creditable results. But, you know, Aston Villa coming up, then in the Premier League, it's Leicester, Watford. These are games that will Crystal Palace, I forgot to mention as well, apologies. These are games that I think will ultimately sort of decide where those scales sit and, you know, what the perception of Arteta and his team is, especially going into that Liverpool game in November. So it's a really, really critical, crucially important run.
Yeah. Mikel Arteta did win manager of the month. I don't know. I was sort of, I don't know about you, Adrian, I was sort of vaguely nonplussed by that. We had a good run. We definitely did. We beat Norwich and we beat Burnley and we obviously spanked Tottenham. Battered Tottenham, in fact, and and like I say, and then Brighton came along, and obviously the Twitter sphere went, oh, it's all gone wrong again. I want to ask you a specific question about Granit Xhaka. I mean, he, you know, obviously he was going to be in the first team, and then he's going to be out for a couple of months. You'd hope that Sambi Lokonga will step up. But he missed a great opportunity to put Emile Smith-Rowe in against Brighton. And you sort of feel like Granit might have made that pass. We're going to miss him, right?
I think so, yeah. He still is, you know, one of our two best central midfielders. I don't think there's any question about that.
And there is amongst my mates, but okay.
Is there? Yeah, no, there I think is. He is. Look, Arsenal's central midfield unit is a work in progress. If Thomas Partey can you know, fulfill his potential. And I've seen he didn't have a good game, Partey, against Brighton, but he had a great pre-season and you know, he's looked good in the other games. So
scored for international, scored in his international breaks.
So. He's a class act. It is, can Lokonga deliver alongside him? I think, and that will hold the key really to unlocking our attacking potential, because I don't think if you looked at Saka, Smith-Rowe and Ødegaard, chucking Pepe as an option, and you looked at the two centre forwards that we can choose from, I don't think anyone could argue that that's not a really potentially potent forward line.
Yeah.
But you've got to be able to go to places like Brighton and control the game. You've got to be able to come up against a tactically astute team that, yeah, are in good form, but ultimately don't have as good players as you. And you've got to be able to handle their press brilliantly from the back. You've got to, you know, you've got to be confident enough to play through it, or be astute enough to play the right passes to bypass it. In that game against Brighton, I thought the Partey and Lokonga weren't very good. They didn't play to their potential, and that was at the heart of it. Now, if in this run of games that James talked about that they produce a similar level of form, then Arsenal will struggle, I think, to pick up consistent wins. If they can play as well as I think we all believe they can, then we've got a great chance of winning those matches. So, yeah, it's that holds the key for me, that particular unit. And Xhaka being out is a blow. We can't deny it. But At the same time, we know that Granit, you know, always has a concentration lapse in his locker. that he's not the finished article himself. So the door is open for Lokonga. The other thing tactically, very briefly, that I would like to see Mikel Arteta have a think about changing is the whole thing about Xhaka coming into the left-back position, which allows Tierney to go forward. It leaves that central midfield so light in numbers. If we lose the ball, there's just Thomas Partey, really. And Lokonga did that role at Brighton for obvious reasons. He's not as comfortable at that. And I fear that he could be, you know, isolated out there, maybe gives the ball away and other teams get at us through the heart of the pitch. So maybe a little tweak is needed because each player is different and that style I don't think suits Lokonga like it did Granit Xhaka.
This is Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We were a bit with the handbrake at time.
Ian Stone here with Adrian Clark and James McNicholas talking about Arsenal, how the season's gone so far. Adrian, you've been watching the Arsenal women's team. Mm-hmm. It was a... we were talking about corrective with the Brighton game. The Barcelona game was a bit of a corrective. I mean, they are a step up, aren't they? I mean, I was watching them and I thought, this is one of the best... I mean, I just love watching them. Forget men or women's football. This is just a great football team to watch. Wasn't nice seeing our team get beaten the way they did, but it does give us an indication of where we need to be.
Yeah, look, the Brighton game was a reality check for the men's first team. I think the Barcelona defeat was the same for Jonas Edervall's team. But Barcelona, this Barcelona team is elite. It's like the All Blacks. It's like you're playing one of the best sporting teams on the planet, really. And I don't think there should be too much shame in that. They seem to batter everybody. So I would prefer to sort of park what happened there. Yeah, the defence was caught square with a high line on numerous occasions. So that's something for Jonas to think about. But Adrian,
when they came back at the weekend and they beat Everton 3-0 and they looked back to their sort of old happy selves, and you thought, and I read the piece that De Roche wrote, a very nice piece for the Athletic, which you can have a look at, about the game and about the tactics, and it felt like it took them half an hour or so to sort of absorb what had happened in midweek, and then they came out and they beat Everton comfortably.
Yeah, look, in WSL terms, it's going swimmingly. They've been brilliant, and it's all about levels. Barcelona are just on a different plane to pretty much anybody else. I think domestically, Arsenal have a great chance of winning the title, which is awesome. Really, really impressed with so much of what they've done so far. Tactically, I think that Edervall has got them pressing a little bit better. He's also moved away, not from the tiki-taka, but, you know, short passing, you know, lovely little triangles. That still happens. But now they're not afraid to go longer. on occasion. They're clipping more balls over the top, percentage passes, and that's given them more variety. I think that's a great addition to their armoury. And individuals are, I mean, so many of the individuals are on fire. I mean,
we've got some excellent players.
Beth Mead has just been sensational. You know, some of her crosses, some of her goals, amazing. The new signings, I think, have been great. Iwabuchi, did you see a nutmeg tackle against Spurs? She sort of did a 50-50 and she megged the player and then spanked it in the top corner in the North London Derby. That was a real highlight. I loved it. Tobin Heath on the wing, fantastic. Frieda Mana lashed one into the top corner against Everton.
Oh, what a strike from Frieda Mana! That is simply outstanding.
Some good goals at the weekend, weren't they?
Really good. Yeah, there's loads to like. And I haven't even mentioned Katie McCabe, who is kind of turning into the Lucas Podolski of the Arsenal women's team. I mean, she's just got a hammer left foot, hasn't she?
Yeah.
And she's a player that last season was great and she's carrying on that form. So look, I think the Arsenal women's team, in spite of that Barcelona, you know, beating a tremendous, and I think they've improved again this season.
James, I wanted to ask you, there's one thing that in Art's piece, he was interviewing Jonas Edevall, and Jonas said, I think it's so important you're not only focused on the outcome. If you are, then it becomes impossible to coach or teach them. If you're only focusing on the result, you might do a lot of actions that are actually not up to the standard that you know would be required, but the result may still be very positive because of individual skill or luck. And if those things happen, you just look away from them not being up to standard and say it's great because we won 3-0, but you'll never develop onto that style. I know we've talked about this in terms of doing comedy, that unless you're trying out new material, essentially, you can have a great gig, but you're not moving forward. And that seems to be what he's talking about here.
Yeah, and that you've got to have good process underpinning things. I mean, football is a crazy game because it's such a narrow scoring game. You know, games can be decided, as he said, by one piece of individual skill or one piece of bad judgment or one piece of good or bad luck. You can't always control those as a coach. What you can control is the kind of tactical rigor, everything that's underneath that, everything that goes into the game. And he seems to have made a fantastic start. And just to put that Barcelona defeat in context, I actually heard that some of the Arsenal coaching staff and indeed executives said that was one of the best performances that they'd ever seen a women's football team produce, that Barcelona gave against Arsenal. And, you know, I think there is really no shame in losing that one. And actually, you know, I think Jonas, the type of coach he is, he'll probably be using that as a learning experience and trying to impress that on the players. And the fact they responded so well in the Super League is really promising. I mean, the goal Katie McCabe scored last week from 40 yards out on the right-hand side, I was thinking she's not going to top that, and no chance. And then the one she managed this weekend, I think is arguably even better. She takes it on the thigh and then volleys it into the far top corner. Just extraordinary. And what's good to see as well is the crowds are up at Boreham Wood, what I hear, regularly getting over 2,000 fans there now. I saw Ian Wright was down there again at the weekend. He's been a great sort of ambassador for the team and the women's game more generally. Really, really exciting times. And the club made substantial investment in the women's team, and they're going to continue doing that in terms of building out the infrastructure, you know, so that it's more akin to what we see on the men's side in terms of kind of the structure of the staff, the idea of a technical director, all things like that, hopefully are going to be introduced over the years to come as they kind of build out that infrastructure. But really encouraging and really exciting and fantastic to see how well the team's doing, certainly on the domestic front where they are flying.
They certainly are. By the way, I mentioned Art's piece. If you want more insight on the Arsenal youth team as well, The Athletic, you can read about them there. The game's coming up, by the way. We've got Palace next Monday for the men's team. Really, I think the excitement, Adrian, for me is having Patrick Vieira back at the Arsenal, isn't it? I mean, I can't wait to see him and to sing the song.
Yeah, do you think that the fans will a little bit? I think they will, won't they, at some
point.
Won't
you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's Vieira.
Well, I won't, because I'll be working. Just be silly. But
okay, well, I won't be working and I will be singing it because, you know, he's one of my all-time favourite players and I want him to know how much we loved him. I mean, I think he does anyway, but it'd be nice to see him back, right?
Definitely, yeah, because he never really got a proper chance to say goodbye. And he is one of the most loved players of that generation. Just such an aura about him. You know, I was privileged to play alongside him a few times and he was just sensational. And and I think we all hope, really, don't we, that Patrick Vieira becomes a phenomenal manager. Because if he does, then there is the prospect, of course, somewhere down the line that he might rock up as the Arsenal gaffer, so which I think would be a lovely sight. But he's in the business of proving himself at the moment, isn't he, with Crystal Palace? And yeah, wishing the best of luck, but just not in that particular
not against
game.
Us. No,
I like the cut of his jib though. The style change that he's implemented at Palace has been quick.
They're watchable, aren't they?
Yeah, they've definitely he's done a lot of work on the training ground to change that style. And it's not really been at the detriment of results. They've been picking up the kind of results that they probably would have done under Roy Hodgson. So I think it goes down as a good start. But yeah, I hope we batter them in the game, obviously.
Yeah. James, it will be nice to see Patrick again. But as you said just before, we've got winnable fixtures before we come up against Liverpool. We've got to show that we're an upper mid-table team, haven't we, at the very least?
I'd like to think so. I mean, to come back with two home games back-to-back, I think is really helpful, you know, and gives Arsenal a bit of a building block for this kind of next period of the season. There are more international games not too far away, I think, in November. So, you know, it's sort of another weird block for Arsenal to look at, you know, this kind of 4 or 5 game block and see where they can get to. But I think it'll be fantastic to see Vieira back. I mean, one of my all-time favourite players, someone who's been in the mix for the Arsenal job previously, hasn't worked out for a variety of different reasons, but I'm sure he's got one eye on that still, even though he's very focused on the job he's done at Crystal Palace. And I have been impressed. I mean, you know, they have shifted the style. The player profile that they've recruited is very exciting, not too dissimilar to Arsenal in terms of going for younger players. I think there's some really exciting talent there for him to work with. I think, you know, they've been pressing from the front. They look aggressive. I think there'll be a challenge for sure, but this is a game that Arsenal, if they're serious about their kind of top six ambitions, probably should win and hopefully will win. It would kind of it would be a great start to this next period if they could, you know, beat Palace and Villa and be in decent shape before they go to Leicester the following week.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we should talk about a top seven now, really, what with the Newcastle takeover as well. And I don't think we really want to get into the moral rights and wrongs of of that on this podcast, but there's a lot of competition out there. We have to step up. Let's have a song to finish. James, I'll start with you.
Well, we talked about Jack Wilshere and nice to see him back at the club. Nice to see him with a smile on his face. I've picked a song that you'll probably know, Ian. It's by The Who and it's called Happy Jack.
Because I'm really old is what he's saying there, listener. Okay, you'll remember that. Did you play it on your gramophone?
Exactly,
I did. Yeah. I remember grandfather playing it to me. Yeah. What about you, Adrian? What have you? Anything else by Caruso maybe from the 1890s when I was a child? What have you got?
Well, I've got something from back in the day. You did a nice segue there in terms of the Newcastle news because it made me think that the mountain back to the top has sort of become even more treacherous, hasn't it? But we've got to get there through good management, sound investment, ambition, risk. I don't know. We have to get back to the top. We can't settle for staying on this particular plateau. We just can't. This is Arsenal. So I've picked out Climb Every Mountain from The Sound of Music. I know it's not cool to say it, but I like The Sound of Music. I was in it at school in the school production. I remember, the words, you know, climb every mountain, search high and low, follow every byway.
Climb every mountain.
Every path, you know. We got to ford every stream, follow every rainbow, till we find our dream. So climb every mountain.
I'm inspired. I don't know about you. I'm standing up at this point, James. I'm going, because I'm talking about the international break, I know this is old school. I've gone Tired of Waiting for You. because I'm just desperate for what I want to call proper football to kick in again by the Kinks. So I'm having that. Thank you to James. Thank you, Adrian. And thank you, Abby, our producer. I'm Ian Stone. Thank you guys for listening. This has been Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast from The Athletic. See ya.